Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth.
Carl wasn't here when I said I was lining up the scripture readers with the amount of scripture. Those short ones, you're lucky. Good evening, everyone. It's certainly a pleasure to be back with you once again this evening to see everyone and smiling faces. I'm like John. I've heard the Cleveland Clinic mentioned enough. But I don't know why we all of a sudden got to be Cleveland Clinic people. Everybody's going there to and fro. But let's remember those that are struggling with health problems that was mentioned in prayer. There are many. Kind of continue this morning in the thoughts about this morning. And as Paul read Genesis 1:1, we know that in the beginning that God created heaven and the earth. I'm thinking about a group. That, and actually a small group in the campus of Virginia Tech University. And they meet, and they had a meeting, and actually it's a bunch of young people really gathered after their classes. And it pretty quickly, there was a sense of quiet in the meeting, a sense of quiet in the talk in the meeting, and almost secretive, and something that they really didn't want people to know about. And, in fact, a shy young woman says this, "My closest friends know, but where I come from, no one is like me. I can't tell my parents about this." And others in the meeting nod sympathetically as she talks and she speaks like this in private and just kind of a closed-door session here. They're afraid to come out. They're afraid to go public with what this meeting is about. So what are they talking about? We were talking about meeting of gay and lesbian, maybe gay married. What is this on the Virginia Tech campus is meeting of agnostics and atheists. And if things continue as they are, and I don't think it'll be very long, I don't think these students are going to be meeting in private like that. I think it's going to come a time when they'll proudly announce that there is no God, that they are atheists. In 2007, there were 100 of these clubs in universities, and now, 9 years later, there are over 350 of these clubs of atheists and agnostics that are meeting on the campuses of our universities. And I think that demonstrates, that reflects, I think, a real shift in the way that we think as a society, as a culture, the demographics of us. And it speaks volumes, I think, of the younger generation that's now on the scene. One survey found that more than one-third, I got it here, I always write this stuff down, I can't see it. One-third of the age of Americans, ages 18 to 29, say they have no religious affiliation whatsoever. And that's probably about right. And it's not hard to imagine, though, the reason for that, as we talked about this morning, the constant attack on faith by such atheists as Richard Dawkins and Harris and all those guys. They're constantly stirring up the no God concept and all these books and all the publicity that they're getting on CNN and all of that, and the relentless attacks on Christianity and the belief that God is not real and God is not in existence is constantly being bombarded all around. How long, when I look at that, how long is it until those one-third of those folks, instead of having no religious affiliation, just believe there's no God at all? And it's not going to take long. Usually that's the next step. Or at least question God as an agnostic would. I think right now, there's a stigma in this area, and I think in the South, that hey, listen, I don't believe in God. I think the stigma's still here. If somebody would say that in Jackson County, most people say, "What? Really? I mean, are you serious?" And I think that's dying out, though. Because stigmas come and go. Remember when it was a stigma to live with somebody before you married them? Oh, that's just a terrible thing. You can't just that enough. Well, that was a stigma. Now it's just common life. And the stigma of being openly homosexual, openly gay. There was a stigma about that. Well, there's no stigma about that now. So I'm saying, I say all that to say that stigmas change. And we ought not to be surprised that as time goes on, around here, but that's, so what, you believe in God, don't believe in God, it's not a big deal. I never thought that you would say that about the area that we live in, because most folks that I know around here seem to be pretty religious minded. But in our society as well, I just wonder how long it'll be that people proudly announce that they don't believe in God, that they're atheists. What we're talking about here really is a battle, I think, for the, I just think, the very existence of our Lord. And I think the battle's on. Because more and more, as I said this morning, what motivated these lessons today was somebody that's very near and dear to me, that I baptized and was well grounded in the truth, announced that he's agnostic and leaning really toward atheism. How do you know God exists? You know, the Bible begins with that announcement, really. And when you look at that beginning, the call read, and really, the Bible doesn't make a specific and explicit announcement or a case, I guess, that God exists. But as you look at what the Word of God says about the belief in the existence of God, well, it references these ideas over again and again. I think it's important for us to know that without the belief in God, that the Bible finishes just where it starts, Genesis 1:1. Alright? So this matter of God's existence, I think that it needs to matter. I think it's a very important thing. So I want to be very clear. I think it's alarming the attention that the atheists are getting. I said that this morning, every poll, every time that comes out with a new idea. But for us, for Americans, every poll so far shows that we, as Americans, we are God believers. We still believe in God. We accept God as the supreme being. All of those things, and we still overwhelmingly believe in God. But things change. And that's what I want to be aware of. That's why I'm throwing up the red flag, that things do change, and that atheists are constantly ridiculing the faith, constantly ridiculing about God. That if you believe in God, it's the backwoods, that you're ignorant and all that. And really, they want you to know that you're lost in a struggle till the death with science and God. And that science is going to win. And that's the battle that we're in. So, are we ready for that? Are you ready for that? Because it's coming. And I'm not necessarily talking about a little group meeting at the Virginia Tech campus. I'm talking about you. How would you respond to your kid or your grandkid or your neighbor and say, how do you know that God is real? What would you say to that? You say there's a God? Explain to me. Why do you believe there's a God? What do you believe that would convince me that there's a God? Because the thing about that, I want you to think that as we discuss this, that we appeal to reason, and that as we look at this discourse about some of the points I'm going to bring up about why with God, how you would answer that. But I want you to know that, and I've said this before, there's no greater time. People don't care what you believe. Hey, can you tell me why you believe in God? Yes, you got that. I don't care what you believe. Just shrug your shoulders. You believe what you want to believe. I believe what I want to believe. I don't think there's any other time in our history that we're so far off the mark about actually being concerned about something that's so vital as the existence of God. I just think people don't care about any of it. And that's the attitude, that lays the foundation, that lays the groundwork for somebody not to have any substance in their life, no God, no supreme being, all of that. And so that's what's being laid out there. But I believe it's absolutely important. Who's on the top? Who is it? Who's number one? Is the human? Are you the guy on top? Are we there? Are we in charge? Are we large and in charge? Are we not accountable to anyone? Is that the deal? Is that the deal that we've got? Because if there's no supreme being, then we can just do what we want. We can act how we want. We really don't have a right or wrong. Nobody's going to tell us anything, what's right or wrong. We can do what we want. And really, maybe Hitler got it right. The way you want something, just mow people down and go get it. Because it's not a big deal. You're not accountable to anyone. Who's to say? Otherwise, it's really, as the atheists and the evolution have us, we're just a bunch of animals. Well, he needs to ask that question about, really, I guess it boils down to, what's the whole purpose of life? Why are you here? What are you here for? What is the purpose that we're here? Acts chapter 17. And I want you to look at that. Paul makes this appeal in Acts chapter 17. He talks about the people of Athens who were polytheists. In other words, there were many gods. And he identifies the purpose of life. Acts chapter 17, the real purpose of life is to know God. That's what he says, is the real God, verse 26. And he, God, made from one man every nation of mankind to live in all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and boundaries and habitation, he says, so that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him, find him, though he is not far from each of us. One purpose in life is to know God. Now, if there's no God, then there's no real meaning in life. That's a given statement. There'd be no purpose in life. I like what this French philosopher John Paul Sartre said. I was thinking that here we are, and we're eating, and we're drinking to preserve our precious existence, and there's nothing, absolutely no reason for existing. Now, that's where atheism gets. That's where you're going to go with atheism, because absolutely nothing matters. Now, tell me again that God doesn't matter. Tell me again that life doesn't matter. Tell me again that it's not important that we recognize that there's a supreme being. Well, you know, I've got some things here, but I need to tell you, and you might have experienced this, because I just did, that no matter how good of an explanation that we come up with and some of the points that we come up with, you're not going to force somebody to believe in God. All right. You're not going to force somebody to obey the gospel. You're not going to force somebody to come to services. You're not going to force somebody to live a Christian life. We're free will characters. We certainly are. And so sometimes, in a sense, no matter how good the evidence is, hey, there might be some people in here. I don't buy it. Well, I will say this, that there's some very compelling philosophical argument about the existence of God. You're not going to hear it from me. You're not going to hear those arguments from me. There's deep things that we can go to. Maybe we can get some people from the Apologetics Center to come over and those few people over there. But what I'm going to say tonight is that these are just very clear ideas. I believe they're very accurate ideas. I believe they're very biblical ideas, scriptural ideas. And really, as you hear them, for me, they just make sense. As I look at what the scriptures say, it just plain out makes sense to me. Hebrews chapter 3. For undeniable proof that there is God. All right? Now, as I said on the outset, the Bible doesn't make an explicit, specific case for the existence of God, but certainly what the scriptures do is reference that, all of these ideas all along. Now, Hebrews chapter 3 gives us a straight to that. Look at verse 4. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things, he says, is God. Every house has to be built by somebody. That's the law of cause and effect. You have something here, a house is here. Well, what caused that? How'd that get there? Well, the Bible says that a builder built it. Now, we understand that to be the law of cause and effect. If you're walking in the woods and you're just walking along and all of a sudden you look down and there's this watch laying in the leaves. And you just, isn't that something? That watch just appeared in the leaves. There it is. There it is. Now, even your 4-year-old kid that you have with you walking, he'd look at it and say, "Watch! Hey, look, Dad, somebody lost the watch." He would know that watch came, had a cause. It came from somebody. It just didn't appear. Alright? So, we know that there's cause and effect. Somebody called the watch that you stumbled onto in the woods. You'd say that's fake. Well, even the 4-year-old would recognize that. So the Hebrew writer, that's what he's saying. Every house has a what? Every house has a designer. Every house has a builder. Now, what are we living in? I'm going to tell you what, we're living in a huge house. It's called the universe. It's a big one. What caused it? What caused the house that we're living in, all right? Well, why is there, I guess, something now? From nothing. That'd be a good question. Why is that? That's a philosophical statement. What caused all this? Now, atheists argue that nobody caused. Here's the what? Nobody caused that what? Here's the universe. Nobody caused that to happen. It's just there. The universe is there. It just popped into being. We talked about Stephen Hawking this morning. Hawking, the guy, very famous atheist. Here's his quote. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. spontaneous creation.
Wow.
Is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Are we supposed to take that seriously?
Wow, that's Stephen Hawking.
Does anybody know who this guy is? He's got PhDs all the time. Now, somebody that wasn't just built up by the media and just think he's just the most intelligent thing in the world, if somebody else besides this guy would say that something came from nothing, really? Now think about what he just said. Something came from nothing.
Well, I can see myself with Johnny there at the house.
Hey, Mom's doing the laundry, and she's cleaning out pockets, and there's a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
You know, Mom, the law of science says that even though there was nothing in my pocket, those laws just spontaneously created themselves.
I wish I'd have known that argument. I wouldn't have gotten behind in with it much.
Really? Really, truly, I'll be right about that. Nobody's buying that. Who's buying that? How'd they get to it?
What, they just spontaneously came out?
Look, I want to tell you something. I don't want to go too deep. Nothing comes from nothing. That's bottom line. That's about as deep as I can go with that. Absolutely nothing comes from absolutely nothing. That's it. That's as deep as I can go with it. Now, if there's nothing, guess what? There's no law of gravity. Because if there's a law of anything, there's something. If there's nothing, there's no law of gravity. All right?
What?
Nothing comes from nothing. Now, you run that by an atheist. Cause and effect. You know what they're going to say? You ready? Where'd God come from? Huh? You know what that is? That's just the atheist way of saying, to get your mind off of what you're really thinking about. That's what they do. Because they can't prove that the universe came from nothing. All right? Now, when you talk about cause and effect, it's very important that you recognize that God isn't in that. You know why? Because when you talk about cause and effect, you talk about all the natural things, the universe, physical things, that are entailed and that are in the realm of natural law. We need to understand that in our universe, there's cause and effect. All that works in nature, all that works in natural phenomena, alright? We need to recognize where that law applies. There's lots of things that doesn't apply to cause and effect. What caused blue? You know? What caused love? What caused the number four? You know, we can do what causes ideas? Ideas, for example, are beyond that sort of reasoning or that sort of effect. I don't want to bore you out there, but look at Exodus chapter 3. We'll just go to Exodus 3. There God reveals himself to Moses in a burning bush. Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, I think it's about, what is it, 14? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am. I am has sent you. That's part of his nature. God revealing who he is. That's part of who he is. That's why he calls himself I am. God is untaught. Do you understand that? God is untaught. Okay? He's not an effect. He is in fact, what is he? He's the cause of everything. God's the cause of everything, so God has no need to have been called or created because he lives outside of what? The time and space of cause and effect and all of those laws that pertain to the natural things that we're talking about. God's not there. God's not there. Alright? So somebody say, who created God? It's sort of the wrong question. You don't say that. You see that Mary Baxter?
What?
You ever see a square circle? You see the question? See how that's worded? It's all goofy. You can't say that about God. Who created God? No. No, he's not there. That's the wrong question. That question can't apply to God. That's the point. That's what I'm getting at. Alright, doesn't fit. God's not the subject cause and effect. But I'll tell you what is the universe. You are in that law, or in that realm. Alright, the universe is a natural phenomenon. And by the way, you know, when you're talking about that, for a long time, the atheist said that what about the universe? That it always did what? Always existed. That everything out there had always existed. That argument was out there when I was a kid. And you know what now? They want to get out of that. Because when they started looking at it, that the universe has always existed, there was no cause, it was infinite just like God. And what happened was, they looked at Einstein's theory, and astronomers started building on that, And you know what they realized? They realized that the universe didn't always exist like they had said, but it had what?
It had a beginning.
Now, if it had a beginning, it had a beginning, you see. So that's why they want to stray away from that. Atheists hate that, and because it had a beginning point. Sometime, somewhere in the past, all of this was started. It began by someone who built the house. Every house has a builder. Who began this house? What caused the enormous effect
that we're engulfed in here? That's a good question. You start talking about creation, I think at least the second truth about God.
And I want to say that we see ourselves and we see our planet, it's just fine-tuned, I won't say for life, really. And let's go to Genesis 1. You know, sometimes when we're talking about the beginning of the universe, a lot of folks just think it's just random. You know, a lot of things happen, you know, maybe God did this, it's just all random and all by accident. But that's not at all what happened. Look at verse 3, Genesis chapter 1. Then God said, let there be light. Alright. There was light. Look at verse 6. Then God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. Let it separate the waters from the waters. Alright. Now look at verse 9. Then God said, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. Let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, gathered the waters, and called the sea. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their own kind with seed in them, and so it was. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and the trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. And God saw all that was good. And look at all that. What you see in Genesis 1 and 2 is progression. And you see order in the creation and careful fine tuning. And the reason for all that is because so that creation can do what? Survive. And exist. It had to have this order. And it had to have this fine-tuning. There's some, and really as science goes on, and there are some scientists that have changed to that, because they'll go with this. They change. When they see how it is so fine-tuned and how everything depends on everything, guess what? There's a lot of scientists that are believing in God these days. When they see how the order is, the more they come to realize there's a huge number of factors in our life that folks just got to come together. And they got to come together at the right time, because if they don't come together at the right time, you're not going to have life. And they're finding that out. And all the fundamental forces that go with that, they're finding that out. In the atom, what is it? There's a positive nuclear force, there's a negative nuclear force, there's a weak nuclear force. Physicists talk about all this all the time. And just researching in preacher time. You know, if we got too much of the strong one, you know what? All hydrogen, guess what? No life. If it's too weak, guess what? Not enough, there's no life. And you look at this stuff, and if the forces are too weak, the atoms don't stick together, there's no molecules, and if you don't have any molecules, guess what? You don't have life. And all these things they're finding out, and it just goes on and on from there. What about gravity? You know, you think about gravity, you think about the stars and the planets, it wasn't enough, they never light up. If it was too much, what would they do? They'd burn up. What about our solar system? What about Jupiter out there? Who cares about Jupiter? What are you bringing that up for? It's just a big old planet out there. You know what that thing is? Well, that thing is so huge, and it's circling in our solar system around our sun, just like we are. You know what it does? It sucks every asteroid and comet and meteorite. It's so big, its gravitational pull is so huge. Hey, I'm glad it's out there. It's like a big vacuum cleaner. If we didn't have it up here, well, we'd be blasted. I'm glad it's out there, aren't you? How about the distance from the sun? 93 million miles. That's a little closer. A little closer. A little farther. A little colder. See how that works? Everything is just right. To do what? To sustain life. Had order, all of these things. Like what one astronomer said. He estimated the odds of a life-friendly planet like we have here on Earth of getting all those things just right, so you can sit here and breathe and look at me, that you just, everything's just right. Here's the odds, you ready? 1 in 10 to the 129th power. You know what that is? That's a 1 followed by 129 zeros. That's the odds. 1 in 1 followed by 129 zeros. Here's how you say that. 1,000 quintillion, 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 quintillion.
Those are larger odds than what? Steelers win the Super Bowl.
Those are big odds. And what that's saying is, it just can't happen. That's what it's saying. That's kind of odd.
I like what this guy wrote in the Wall Street Journal.
Today, there are more than 200 known perimeters for a planet to support life. And every single one of them has to be perfectly met or the whole thing falls apart.
Wow.
What are we saying here, Cliff? We're saying that the universe is here. That's number one. But we're not going to say that. We're saying everything in it has to be exactly right for us to do what we're doing. For us to be how we're doing. Everything's got to be perfect.
Well,
how do we handle that? How do atheists handle that?
I'll tell you what to do.
The new argument is, now, we're in a galaxy, we're in a universe, we're in this place. Now, guess what? You know, besides our universe, you know how many universes there are? Billions and billions and billions. And they're millions and millions and trillion light years apart. It just goes on forever. And what they're saying is now, because this is all coming up, what they're saying is that when you have all these billions of universes, that eventually one of them is going to get lucky and fortunate enough to have everything just perfect. You see what? There's the off. Here's all the billions and billions of universes. Guess what? I want those guys to play the lottery. Now think about that. That's how they come up with that. That the reason that we got it is that this universe, this planet, out of all the billions and billions and billions, that's what the odds finally came our way. Right? You know what? If a fellow was dealing cards and you playing cards with him, and every time you playing poker with your buddies, and you got four aces every hand, every time. What do you think about that? And now there's just billions and billions of galaxies and universes, and there's just billions and billions of card games, isn't there? And I'm just a lucky guy that every time that I get four aces, would you buy? Or would you say, I'm cheating? Think about it. Yeah, no one buy that. And that's just four aces we're talking about. That's just a card game. Nobody's going to buy that. But that's nothing compared to the infinite complexity of the universe and the life that we have. Think about it. This leads to third evidence of God. Really, that's when we talk about intelligent design and cause and effect. You know, if you wreck your car, the insurance guy's going to go out there and he's going to look at it and he's going to see, was this an accident? All right. He's going to say, he's going to look and see, is it a random accident when he had a wreck, or was it done on purpose? Archaeologists do the same thing. They're out there, here's this rock. It's 100 million years old, by the way. You know why it's 100 million years old? Because the rock beside it's 100 million years old. We dated that one too. Carbon date. 100 million, everything's 100, whatever date they decide. But anyway, is this rock, is it just here doing nothing? Or is this rock, maybe it's an arrowhead that's been chipped away. And maybe it's been crafted as we look and we do research on this thing. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about design. When we talk about God's intent and God's purpose, what we're looking to see if something has intelligent purpose behind it. That's what design is. And that's a powerful call. When you think about intelligent design and that movement, what it says is our world not only was created, but behind the creation is intelligent design. And with a little bit of observation and with a little bit of sense, you can see the intelligent design behind all of it. Does it show intent? Does what we're talking about, does it show a designer? And we have to reason about that. We have to come to conclusions about that. Well, I'll talk about what kind of illustration you use for that. How about your eyes? If I've got them, they all got two eyes. If I look out there, I'm looking at you guys. They all got two eyes. I look up this thing, and it's amazing just how that works. Now, I'm not going to go into any detail. Where's that thing I wrote? Ocular reflex. I didn't know, but you know your eye twitches all the time and twitches so fast and stuff. And what it does, and the reason it does, when you turn your head and stuff, guess what? You didn't get blurry when it did that. When you take off blurring, when you move, you jump up and down, you know why things aren't blurry? Because that happens all the time. And it's called ocular reflex. It's something that's there. And it's amazing that that happens. And there's lots of stuff, and I won't go into detail about your eyes, just your eyes. Just your set of eyes. We talk about blinking, irrigation, lubrication, protection, all that goes into that. Do you know that we blink 4,200,000 times a year. Everybody just went. Add that one more. All right. All of that does what? Make your eye work. Keep your eyes working. That's what that is. And you think about that, I'll talk about the lens, the cornea, the retina. And don't forget about drugs, that'll be hooked up to your brain. So your brain can relay what you're seeing and send messages from your eye, and so you can respond. Think about all of that. That's just one part of your body. What part of that looks random to you? What part of all of that looks random to you? Any of it? What about, as you look at that, how did that just come about? And we'll just talk about the eyes, just a couple eyes. Just too many systems that all need to come together all at the same time. It's proof, isn't it? That there's a design behind that. Well, it shows what? It does show a design. Psalm says in 139. Psalm 139. He says this, verse 14. He says, I will give thanks to you. Why? I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. And my soul, he says, knows it very well. So the universe is here. We're placed here exactly in the right place in the universe to be sustained and to grow. Then everything about our lives shows that we have been designed so that we can live, so that we can grow. Atheists can deny that all they want to. But folks, I'm telling you what, there isn't too much evidence for me. I just can't buy it. There's a design. And that brings me to the last point about there's a design. And that there's a God, the existence of God. And maybe it's even one, I think of all of them when I thought of this, is that actually God has been seen. Did you know that? God has been seen on this earth. Look at Romans chapter 1. He mentions discussing how creation forms the basis of our belief in God. Romans chapter 1. Look at verse 19. Because, he says, that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, divine nature, have been what? Clearly seen, he says. He talks about creation. He talks about the universe. He talks about cause and effect. He talks about how the eye works. All that to go. Everything of that to go. But you meet somebody who really don't believe in watches. Oh, don't give me that watch stuff. I don't believe. Well, I don't believe you can put something that little on your wrist and get all those little things in there and keep perfect time. I don't believe anything about that. Now, if you got somebody like that, well, you know what you can do. You could argue that intelligence is design. You could argue all kinds of things. But you know what to do if you have a guy like that? Here's the watch. Look at it. That's what you do. And I think that's what Paul's asking us to do. That's what God's asking us to do. We can go into all those things we just went into, but look out your window. Look around you. Look at the intelligent design. Look at the world. From the creation, he's not given from. We can see what God has done. It's true. We don't have to go into all these shallow arguments, deep arguments. Look around is what Paul says. We know God exists. You know what else? Because God came here to this planet. God walked on the earth. Did you know that? John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Jesus said to them in verse 58, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was born, I am. That's what the Lord claimed. The greatest argument for God is Jesus Christ. Because, folks, Jesus is God. And God has been seen. He came here. The New Testament records his visit. And all through the gospel, look, behold, God, the Son of God, the Son of Man. That's what the New Testament says. How his life changed lives. How he changed our lives. Can there be any more proof than that? That God was here? In the meantime, those atheists, guess what? They're on the rise. They're on the rise in America, and there are more. All these clubs are coming up. But you know what? It's not about what everybody believes. That's not what I'm going to believe. It's not about what everybody doesn't believe. I'm going to believe the things that is revealed to me, that I can see about the argument, the evidence, the overwhelming evidence that shows me, that teaches me, folks, there's God. There's a God, and I think these four arguments, there's a host of others about the existence of God, but we believe in God because I believe the true God exists. There's just too much evidence that he does. It's right. It conforms to reality. It conforms to reason. And I just don't think how the thinking man cannot see those things. That's what we said this morning. You might have made up your mind. I don't care what this guy says. I don't care what he frees out. I'm not going to believe it. Have a good day. We can have all the proof we want. If you made up your mind, that's fine. But I believe wholeheartedly that God exists and that Jesus Christ is his son. Came to this earth, died the death that he did. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Can't change that. No one changed that. I need to believe it. I don't want to be a fool. Because the fool said in his heart, there's no God. Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. That's the gospel. Please stand. That's together we stand and say.